Welcome in to a special holiday-themed edition of At the Buzzer, the Ralphie Report podcast for all of your Colorado Buffaloes needs. I am your first co-host, Jack Barsh, really the only consistent co-host now, and your co-host over there is Sam Mativier, fresh off of a nice, refreshing week off. In case you missed it, last week was the early signing day, which was exciting times for everyone. And the other exciting thing was there was a better co-host, Chase Howell, stepped in.
You know what? I told you that I would be on the podcast and I could, like, be the fan in the room and, like, who's this guy? And then you guys would both explain it, but then you just didn't invite me.
It was a great podcast. We had lots of fun. And the flow was wonderful. Chemistry was palpable. I'm just saying, watch your ass, Sam.
I like Chase. I wouldn't mind if you replaced me.
Okay. Well, it's not as fun when you don't fight for it. Okay, well, fresh off of an exciting week in football with a new batch of Buffaloes coming in. We have an exciting week of basketball with a new batch of wins coming in for your basket buffs. Tab Boyle took the team to Chicago this week to play in another huge non-conference matchup for CU. They played number 13 Dayton, whose only loss this year is an overtime loss to Kansas. Well, that is, at least until they played the Buffs. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about how the schedule sets up in the Pac-12 play and how CU's looking before the real games start. Sam, any initial thoughts?
What are your initial thoughts? I feel put on the spot.
Okay, well, I guess we'll start a little micro at talking about just the Dayton game. CU won in overtime. Sorry to take the drama away from everyone, off of a ridiculous buzzer beating Deshaun Schwartz 3, and fresh off a ridiculous pass by Tyler Bay and a ridiculous post entry by McKinley Wright on the last possession. But you know, this was at the beginning, this was the CU team that we'd seen all non-con. They were down 19-5 early. They had 4 turnovers. The offense looked stagnant. And then honestly, I think for the turnaround and for the big win, we have to thank the Dayton fans for making the super smart and educated decision to boo McKinley Wright the entire game. Because boy howdy, that woke him up.
Yeah, that's the McKinley Wright we've been wanting to see all year, is pissed off, chip on his shoulder, trying to prove a point.
Yeah, I'm thinking if we can make it happen, let's just try to make the Event Center crowd boo McKinley Wright every game, because he was a man possessed. He ended the game with 29 points. Once again, he is less than 6 feet tall. He ended the game with 10 rebounds. He distributed. He only ended up with, I think, 2 or 3 assists, but he moved the ball where it needed to go. He played pretty lockdown defense, and out of the, 45 minutes of game time, I think he played 42. You know, he was unbelievable out there.
Yeah, I just think that the best version of CU is with him running everything, him attacking. And even though he didn't really hit any threes, I like just his pull-up game, if he's willing to take those confidently, that opens up the floor for him to drive.
Yeah, he didn't even shoot that well percentage-wise. I mean,
I think 1 of 4.
Hold on. Yeah, he shot 9 of 14 from 2. He shot 1 of 8 from 3.
Oh, what?
But he made 80% of his free throws. He had 36% of the total point output. And I honestly liked most of the threes he took. A few were the end of the shot clock bombs that are just – they were either going to be turnovers or shots, you know, which I can't hold those too much against him. But like you said – when he is confident, and part of that confidence is stepping into dribble up threes or transition threes, that's when this team really, really works, is when the confidence is there. And thankfully, for some reason, Dayton fans holding a grudge. 3 years ago, CU or McKinley Wright decommitted from Dayton after the coach that he committed to left. I guess that is a cardinal sin in the state of Ohio, but they booed him. They did not. They were not happy with his presence, and he was not happy for theirs. And he made them pay for it.
Can you imagine what Dayton would look like with McKinley Wright playing there?
This year would be unbelievable. That's a sophomore Obi Toppin, and then a junior McKinley Wright. Yeah, that's a top 5 team.
Yeah, I also, like, just right away, I was impressed with, like, the team defense. After they gave up, what, 8 of the first 9 shots Dayton took were makes?
Well, you say gave up, but...
They were ridiculous shots.
And before we go any further, let's talk a little bit about why this game is so big for CU.
Yeah.
Dayton was, by efficiency metrics, definitely the best 2-point offense in the country, and one of the best 3-point offenses in the country. They just don't miss a lot of shots. They are all pretty experienced. Obi Toppin knows exactly where to get his spots, and there's not a lot of dumb plays. So they don't miss shots. They're very offensively skilled.
Everybody can pass, handle, shoot.
Yeah.
And this makes them impossible to contain because all 5 of their players can attack from many ways.
Yep. Trey Landers on the wing is really good. He's a 6'5". He's a senior guard, or I guess wing players, if you want to call him that. And he's big enough to go dunk on some smaller guys. He's small enough to go past everyone else. You know, they just have a well-put-together roster. And part of the reason that's surprising this year is because 3 of them are transfers, and they've really gelled way better than anyone was expecting into that transfer mindset. So you have basically 3 Carlin Browns on their team, plus Obi Toppin, plus Jalen Crusher, plus Rodney Chapman. It's a good team, and I think they showed that. But the other thing is, once CU saw that they basically will start missing, CU locked them down. And I don't know why they got worse in the defensive metric after this game, because I was very impressed with the rotations and the defense I saw all game.
Yeah, their KenPom defensive rating, what you're referencing there, dropped from, I think, 16th to 21st in the nation after that.
And well, some of that is also how the other teams play. I was looking at it and why they're down to 21st. They're at 89.3, and if you sort it by, which means I believe that means they gave up 89 points per 100 possessions, which is pretty good. And if you look at the teams right above them, 20th is 89.2, 19th is 89.2, 18th is 89.1. You know, that's all basically one game. You know, if CU has another good game defensively, they can jump all of those teams.
All right, yeah. So the rankings are pretty fluid in that range right now.
Regardless, CU's a top-tier defensive team. We've said that all year. It's been proven all year. And the other thing we saw, I think, this game is they've been good at rebounding, but this game especially, they were dominant at rebounding.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's
give a quick 5-minute shout-out to everything that Evan Batty is, because, oh my God, what a guy. Wow.
I love the offensive strategy of just throwing the ball at the rim because you know you're going to get it. It reminds me of, like, I used to referee youth basketball, and there'd be, like, this kid who is, like, 6 feet tall and playing against, like, 5-foot tall kids, and he would just, like, get every single rebound, and his offensive strategy, just throw it at the rim and let him get the board, and you'll eventually get a putback layup or fouled. And that's how you score.
Evan Batty had 12 rebounds. Sam, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head. I was going to ask you, how many of those do you think are offensive rebounds?
8.
Which is unreal. 8 offensive rebounds in one game is ridiculous. 66% of your rebounds coming on the offensive end is even more ridiculous. And when you watch the game, if you did watch the game, every single one of them, they weren't cheap, long rebounds. It was Evan Batty clearing space in that paint and making the rebound happen. It was pure effort. And as excited as we are, that's what's going to get you on the court every time. Tad Boyle will never take a guy off who's working like that.
And, it was nice. He didn't foul once, which is not something we see from Evan Batty.
Yeah, and like we mentioned, sore subject, I guess. Dayton fans were, let's put it nicely, touchy with the free throw discrepancy in the game. So you shot 21, Dayton shot 7. If you look at the team profiles to this point, that also makes sense. CU is, 24th in the country on free throw attempts per field goal attempt. So basically that means that a lot of CU's offense comes from free throws percentage-wise, and they also are pretty good at preventing that for the other team. If you look at Dayton's offense, they are 210th in the country at free throw attempt per field goal attempt. So never mind the fact that matches the profile of these two teams. the way that free throw discrepancy happened. Also, if you get 8 offensive rebounds, you're going to put that shot up right away, and you're going to get a foul or a bucket. And that's what happened. Evan Batty put that shot up right away, and then he got a foul or a bucket. That's part of – I mean
– Oh, no, he just missed one free throw at the very end. But, I mean, even the eye test, like Dayton, like CU doesn't really foul.
Right.
I mean, there was one foul where, like, Shane Gatling drew a charge. That one was not a good call. But, like, everything else, there weren't really any sketchy calls. It was, like – like the offensive rebound or the defensive rebounds Dayton would get, and then their guy would like fall out of bounds, mm-hmm. or would just slip and get called for travel. Mm-hmm. Like, those were just unfortunate.
So there was some salt on the Dayton side of things, to the point where one of their athletic directors actually tweeted out 21-7. I stand with our student athletes. which boy howdy, I cannot imagine how you can get more dramatic, based off an overtime loss at a neutral site. But here we are.
They're pissed they lost to us last year.
Yeah, and like I said, I would like to score them. I would like to schedule them every single year, because what we've seen borne out is that CU wins every time, and also Dayton fans get mad every time. And there's nothing I like more than CU winning and other fans getting mad.
And it's really pretty basketball of two differing styles, and it's just like,
yeah,
great.
The weird thing is, you know, I think the players really actually enjoy each other's company. Like, if you were watching, Obi Toppin and Evan Batty were giving respect to each other at the end of the game for a long time, because I think they both realize these are both really good players in completely contrasting styles. Anthony Grant and Tab Boyle love each other. I don't think there's any loss of respect there.
And like McKinley Wright knows those guys on the Dayton squad, and he was right. Committing to play with them.
Oh, God. Evan Batty, he's an engine that makes his team go. He is an engine. It's just like, it's nice that we have multiple.
We saw that the past few games, too, when CU's offense was kind of scuffling, being lethargic, and he was the one trying to make things happen. Mm-hmm. He was the one bodying guys, trying to get things going.
Yes. And he is a weapon. You know, not every team's going to have a guy like Obi Toppin and then also Shimonga that came off their bench for Dayton. Those are two giant tree trunks, and Obi Toppin is obviously – he's more than a tree trunk. He's a complete athlete. That's like – you know, Obi Toppin is a better version of Aaron Gordon at Arizona, if you remember him.
You say he a better is, version?
Yes. Not defensively. Defensively.
Yeah, I think they're a little bit different.
Offensively, absolutely.
Aaron Gordon was a hustle player at Arizona.
But if you look at the rest of the schedule, there are not a lot of players – like Obi Toppin that CU has to face. Oregon's going to have a few.
Yeah, Oregon has a lot.
I don't know. Everything about this game was exactly how we needed it for CU. Neutral site / road site, really, if you look at the attendance. Hard-fought game. They had to battle back mentally. They had to battle back physically. Everyone had to be counted on. McKinley Wright broke out of his I don't know. It's always, he always does this in the early season. Do you think so? I feel like the last 2 years, McKinley Wright always – try stuff, gets out of his comfort zone a little,
absolutely.
Game-wise. And then, you know, whether it's a separated shoulder, whether it's fans booing him, then he figures out, oh, I'm McKinley Wright, and he becomes the player we know he is.
Yeah, like once he just needs to focus on that and leading the offense. Like against Arizona State and Clemson, like CU was scoring, like they had huge halves, and it was because he was leading everything. Also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Deshaun Schwartz hitting 5 of 7 threes.
Oh, he's
doing great things all the time.
The pure confidence. We tweeted. I guess during the loss to Northern Iowa, I think we tweeted. I wish Deshaun Schwartz believed in himself the way that I believed in him. From the account, which actually got some play from a few other basketball, guys in the CU scene, but. I think it's because that's what most fans feel. Like, we all see what he is and what he can be, and we all think that's who he is all the time. And for some reason, it just doesn't click like that with him.
It has been more this season. It has been better this season.
Oh, yeah. And this game, it clicked. He knew he could hit these shots. Every single three was complete confidence. There was no hesitation. He knew he could drive. We talk about the game-winning three, which was beautiful from everyone. Let's talk about the drive, the possession before, where he split two defenders, including one being a lottery pick in Obi Toppin, to make a ridiculous finger roll left-handed layup. That is an NBA play.
Yeah, I think that So going into the season, we knew what Wright and Bay were, basically. And then Schwartz would be the third, like, swing player. Like, if he can be, like, that scorer, like, the go-to scorer when CU needs it, then that unlocks everything on offense. It gives them a floor spacer that's, like, consistent, hitting five threes in a game. That's huge. And it gives them someone who can go and get his own bucket, create it for his own, if, say, Bay is having troubles because he's guarding a freak athlete and being guarded by him.
Yep. And the thing he did this game, which I've been wanting to see for a while, he used it to distribute too, but he also scored off of this, is now once he hit those few threes, and once he saw how hard they were going to close out on him, he a few times did a pump fake, two dribble drive into the lane, either pass it off or get a layup or a foul. Which, if he can add that point, because we know, I mean, I feel comfortable with the ball in his hands dribbling. I don't think Deshaun Schwartz does any stupid moves. I don't think he has any extra turnovers that aren't necessary.
Yeah, he has some hitting playmaking ability too.
Not to call out other members of this team, especially on the wing, but there are players on this team that do have unforced turnovers quite a bit when they're handling the ball. That's not necessarily Schwartz. So
yeah,
now that he has a shooting and he has a size, adding those together, just letting him do the pump fake, get the guy flying by him, and then take whoever's helping him inside, bully him a little bit, get the bucket, the foul, the pass. If that's consistently there, if this game unlocks that for him, wow. I mean, that's a weapon that not a lot of Pac-12 teams can match up with.
Yeah, I don't think that this will be Schwartz every game or even half the games. I think this will be like a Schwartz that pops up game to game, and it will probably show up more often in big games.
Yep.
As we've seen earlier this year, that's even happened.
Yeah, I mean, that game-winning three was the culmination of this 2017 recruiting class, right? It was McKinley Wright running it down the court, doing a beautiful post-entry to Tyler Bay. Tyler Bay drawing the double team and then doing a absolutely ridiculous pass out of the double team because he knew where Deshaun Schwartz was going to be in that wing spot. And then Deshaun Schwartz finishing the game. You know, that's the vision of his class when they all signed as freshmen.
Yeah, absolutely it is. I just love the versatility and the balance that this team, when it's fully idealized, has. And those top four players have been what we expected, or even better. We just need to see some step-ups from other players.
Yep. And another thing, we haven't mentioned Tyler Bay at all because he had a quiet 12 points and 6 rebounds, which, once again, still a good stat line, especially with who he's playing against. With four steals, yep. Still a good stat line with who he played against. But the thing we talked about is I thought he did a good job of finishing hard at the rim this game.
Yeah, the first half he was okay at it. Second half he started to get a little bit meaner.
He
was a little bit out of it first half, too.
I mean, what else can we say about this game? It was exactly – what a huge win for the tournament seeding. You know, for the non-conference as a whole, for the conference team, big win.
Yeah, I have two thoughts. One is that this just proves, again, Tad Ball works and it travels.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have, like, a team like Dayton that wants to have clean basketball, run up and down the floor, and then, I don't know, just play not in a mud fight, this really works to drag them down, and it's really effective.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing is it's hard to shoot on the road. You're not used to the courts. You haven't really played there ever. Mm-hmm. And
well, you have one shoot around the night before and that's it.
Yeah. And then, but if you just throw it at the rim and just get everything, you can just do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, I think that's also honestly Tad Ball. He said, what does he say? Is shooting comes and goes. Defense always travels, right?
Yeah.
Like, you'll have great shooting nights where you don't need to play ridiculous defense and you blow someone out. And you'll have bad shooting nights where you need to scrape and claw for every single point you get. And his whole philosophy as a program is make sure the scraping and clawing is always, always, always there. Make sure you can always, always, always count on that. Because no matter what, you are going to be in games. If that is your strategy, you are going to be in games no matter what.
Yeah, keep it close. Anything can happen.
And, you know, I hate to bring it up every time, but there are people out there who even now are not believers in the Tab Boyle team and consider the season, this 10-2 non-conference season, a disappointment, partially because of how they looked. And yeah, they've looked gross on offense this year, but like the whole point of Tab Ball is that they've looked gross on offense this year and they're 10-2. It's the and the part, you know.
And they're going to be 11-2. We're assuming they beat Iona. We're not going to record until
that's after. A rough assumption.
What?
I'm not willing to assume anything. But
well, Iona's like 2-5.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. You know, that's the whole point, right? Is it's not just the we look gross on offense, fire Tad. It's the this team has not been good at offense. Everyone agrees. Every single person agrees. And they are still 10-2 with wins over good teams. CU beat Arizona State in China. CU beat Clemson in a neutral court. CU just beat the number 13 team in the country on a neutral court. That does not happen unless you commit every single day to your philosophy of defensive rebounding. That is what Tab Ball is. Oh, I don't know. What a game.
So thoughts on the non-conference schedule. You wanted to brag about something.
Yes. If I remember correctly, when we recorded a podcast before the beginning of the season, I believe I put CU at an 11-2 non-conference or a 10-3 non-conference. And I think I also said that CU was going to drop a game to a team that it shouldn't at home. And I believe I also specifically singled out University of Northern Iowa. So everyone, you're welcome. It's my fault they lost. It's somewhat to be expected. Northern Iowa is good team this year. They're 11-1. They are projected to go 24-6, 13-5 in conference, with the only loss right now looking like it's Loyola Chicago on the road, based off of KenPom's numbers. Northern Iowa is a good team, and CU was not a good team at that point. You know, the non-conference schedule was a masterpiece in terms of getting this team mentally ready for the rigors of the season. You start off with a weird neutral site game against a good team in China. You go to a tournament in Las Vegas, play a wacky Wyoming team, a bad Wyoming team, but a wacky one, and then a pretty good Clemson team to finish it off. And then I think we've mentioned this before on the podcast. We both agreed CU needed to go 3-5 in the last – or 4-6 in the last stretch of the non-conference for their goals to still be in front of them, which it looks like they're going to do, you know. You don't want that Northern Iowa loss, but I don't know how many of us were expecting a Dayton win on a neutral site. So that loss to Kansas, you kind of throw that away because everyone loses to Kansas, the Fog Allen Fieldhouse. I wish they didn't, but everyone does. The Northern Iowa loss, you internalize, and then you win the ones you should. Colorado State, Prairie View, A&M, you won those. And then you win the one you shouldn't in Dayton. And now you're set up for a really good season going into the conference schedule.
And CU, they're going to start with Oregon. And Oregon, 6th in the AP poll, 10th in the KenPom rankings. They've never won in Boulder. It's a 50-50 game. And if CU beats Iona and they climb back into the top 25, which they should, they're 27th right now, it'll be like the second or third top 25 matchup at the Coors Event Center this century.
That is, number one, kind of a depressing fact. Number two, it sucks that the students are on break for that game.
Yeah. That is the Oregon game. That's the highlight of every year, the home game against Oregon and home game against Arizona too. The best game we've really ever seen was when CU played Oregon in 2014. When was the game where it was like 100-98?
2013-2014 season.
I missed that game. I was like seeing fucking X-Men in theaters with my sister.
And this was right after I think they dismantled Tommy Amaker's Harvard squad.
Oh yeah.
God, yeah, and that was the Spencer Dinwiddie. I'm just gonna take this game over, F everyone else.
Yeah, this Oregon team isn't gonna score 98 points, and they're certainly not gonna allow 100 points. But it'll be really competitive, great game. Point guard battle going down, lots of length on both sides of the floor. That's like CU's biggest home challenge in the Pac-12 play, and it's right away.
Mm-hmm. I just looked it up. It was 191. This is back when Oregon had, if you remember this name, Joseph Young.
Yeah.
What a great scorer. And Damian Dotson, famously escaped a lot of Title IX stuff, thanks to Dana Allman and the Oregon Athletic Department. then on our side, Spencer Dinwiddie, 23 points. Askia Booker, 27 points. Josh Scott, 15 points, 12 rebounds. Xavier Johnson, 15 points, 7 rebounds, 5 turnovers. Wesley Gordon with the most Wesley Gordon stat line ever. 4 points, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks.
How many of those were offensive rebounds?
4.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, that team was fun. Anyways, the point is, it's hard for Oregon to win in Boulder for whatever reason. No matter how good either team is, it's hard for them
to win
in Boulder.
Final four. They made the Final Four and lost to a team that lost in the NIT first round.
Yep. And that was with – was that Dylan Brooks, Tyler Dorsey?
Yeah.
Lost to the dynamic duo of Derek White and whoever was next to him.
Josh Fortune.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that's there. They move on. They're going to play at Arizona. They don't get Arizona at home this year, so that sucks. But they can beat Arizona State in Tempe.
I mean, they can beat Arizona in Tucson. Mikhail has not been intimidating this year. St. John's just went in there and dominated.
Yeah, Arizona's been sketchy this year. They have really good freshmen. Like, their offense is great with Nico Mannion and Zeke Nnaji, but they are rough defensively. Like, both of those two are huge minuses on defense.
Yeah, and, well, and the problem with them is their best players are all young, super. They're freshmen, so.
Yeah, Josh Green, too.
It's hard for them to count on anyone right now. If you look at the conference schedule to me as a whole, there's only a few games that you absolutely cannot lose in my mind. What?
The home games to like Oregon State.
Yeah. Like you have to beat Oregon State at home. You have to beat Utah at home.
Even though Kentucky just lost to Utah, you need to beat Utah.
You need to beat Utah. Well, Utah also lost, I believe, to Utah Valley or someone gross earlier this year.
Inconsistent.
Coastal Carolina. They lost to Coastal Carolina by 22.
Oh my God. They're a high variance team.
And that's the thing, is CU is not this year or shouldn't be this year.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right now, people smarter than us are projecting a 22-9 regular season with an 11-7 conference record. If that's what CU ends up at, that is an easy tournament lock.
Yeah, not even in the Pac-12 tournament. That's an easy.
They are, what, I think 27th in net? No, that's the AP pool.
I don't know. I don't follow.
No, they're low 30s in the net, which is what the NCAA committee is mostly going to look at when they're determining teams. And if you're in the low 30s and you're a Power 5 school, you are good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly, thankfully, the Pac-12 is not gross this year. It's not that bad. There are teams that will drag you down. Washington State at home, you need to win that by more than 10 or else you're going to take a hit. Even UCLA at home, that might be a hit in the RPI or the net, depending. And California this year is gross. They are very bad. So you have to win both games against Cal. But other than that, you know, there aren't a lot of super pitfalls. There aren't a lot of games that CU absolutely has to have. Should they win most of the other ones or most of the games? Yes. But
we also avoid the Washington road trip, which is great because we always fuck up against Washington State and Pullman.
Yep. Yep. And Washington this year is also, once again, the antithesis. I mean, it's a zone, which Tad is never that good against. And it's a long zone with a lot of athletes.
Well, I don't think that Washington's very polished. They don't have any playmaker like Matisse Thybulle. Like, if you take Matisse Thybulle off those Washington teams that destroyed CU, I don't really – like, I think CU has a much, much better chance.
Right, but just imagine – I don't know. It's hard for me to see CU matching up naturally with that team.
I don't think they're naturally a good zone defense right now. Like Isaiah Stewart hasn't been a very good defender.
Really? That's interesting, actually. I would consider them – I mean, Jaden McDaniel, they have so much individual talent on offense too that if they want to, one of them can just take over and see if they can win the game, Markelle Fultz style.
Yeah.
Well,
God, can you imagine Lorenzo Romar went, I think, 9-22 with Markelle Fultz on the team.
I know. I know. Well, I watched that happen.
And Matisse Thybulle and Malik Dime. I miss – the student section being so shitty that Malik Dimes slapped two of them in the face.
I know.
Everyone was like, yeah, they deserved it.
We need to bring the assholes back in numbers, in droves. Make Coors hard. Make Coors a terrible place for other people to play.
Yeah, so I think that – so the Oregon game, that's the only toss-up at home. And barring some fuck-up, CU could run, like, through the home schedule undefeated if they beat Oregon, if they beat Washington. Those are their two biggest tests.
Yeah, I mean, it would be the most CU thing ever for this to be the team that breaks the Oregon and Boulder streak, you know?
Yeah.
Because there have been better Oregon teams and there have been worse CU teams, and they still did not break the streak. But it would be so CU for this to be the one, and then they just run the table.
This Oregon team's tough as hell, too. They've come back in some games on neutral sites.
Yeah, well, Peyton Pritchard is, against all odds, a very good player.
I called him the fifth best player on the Oregon team, and I immediately regretted that.
It's because, he looks like Sid from Toy Story. He does not look like a Division I player. But he is very, very good at almost everything. He's so efficient on offense. He runs everything so well. He knows when to move the ball, and he's a pest on defense.
All right.
I don't know.
So
right now, Sam, if you're looking at the conference as a whole, just give me a quick rundown, 1 through 12. Where does CU fit in with that? Who are the teams above CU, if there are any, and who's the dregs of the conference?
I think right now the clear-cut number one is Oregon. And then 2 through 4 is very – it's Colorado, Arizona, Washington, in no order. They're all sketchy. Like they're all inconsistent, but generally good.
Mm-hmm.
Stanford somehow has been pretty good. I don't understand that. They've also been blowing out bad teams, so maybe it's nothing. Oregon State, USC, those are probably in the same tier with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I'm not really thinking about after that.
Okay. If I'm going batting.
Oh, Arizona State's pretty good too.
Yeah, they're fine.
I like their team.
If I'm looking at the bottom up, I think Cal and Washington State once again make up the worst part of the Pac-12. And then you jump another tier to like the UCLA's, the Arizona States, the Oregon States. I think that's the next. What'd you call that grouping? And then after that, you have, to me, you have like the Stanford, Utah, and USC. Yeah. Stanford, Utah, USC group, which is, they're good and they're going to beat most teams they play. But they're not, I'm not scared of them yet.
I think they could beat anybody, but I'm not really scared of them.
Right. And then you jump to Washington, Arizona, Colorado. And I think that team there, that grouping is all pretty much even right now. I'm scared of both those teams, and I think they're both scared of CU.
I'm not really scared of Arizona. I think that we'll lose, but I'm not really scared of them. Like it takes a special Arizona team for me to be scared. Like there has to be like a Ryan Anderson. Or like one of those veteran players that will just beat you up. I'm scared of those players on Arizona.
Right. Well, yeah. There's no TJ McConnell. There's yeah. No. And then I think Oregon's in its own class again. This so far, they just look. They bring in a player like a day before the season starts, and he's already like he knows all the play. I don't understand how they do it. Where it's just the chemistry is already there. It's immediately there.
Dana Altman is one of the very best coaches in college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly the best, honestly.
But he's also a snake, so.
Yeah. Well, Tad Boyle likes him, apparently.
I don't know where that impression comes from, but okay.
No, I was listening to the Free Ballin' podcast, and they were talking about how – I forget which one of those guys was talking to, like, the coaching staff, and apparently, like, CU – the coaches actually hang out with the Oregon coaches when they're on the recruiting trail. And they're like kind of pals. And Dana Altman and Tad respect the hell out of each other.
I mean, they have the similar core tenets. They just have very different ways to get there.
Well, they have different ways of getting players.
That is a very nice way to put it.
And keeping those players on the team despite eligibility issues.
Well, whatever. It works for him, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know. Besides Oregon, give me what game you're most excited to go to.
Oh, that's a good question because we have no Arizona.
Yeah.
I would say Washington, but that's going to be the same knuckle fight that it's been the past 3 years, where both teams just punch each other in the mouth. No one makes shots, and then someone wins 50-48.
Yeah, that's going to be a gross game. I'm not looking forward to that one.
You know, honestly, the way that the Pac-12 has been shaping up right now, I'm actually pretty excited to look at that Stanford game, because they're polished on offense, and you know, they're smaller. CU will have the size advantage, I think, on Stanford. So they're going to try to play similar to Dayton, just a nice, easy game of offensive basketball. I always think it's fun when they come into Boulder and just to see what happens. That's going to be a Lucas Seward game.
No, I like that. That's a good pick. I think I'm most excited for USC just because CU is going to have to blow out somebody at home. And it's going to be somebody good. Like last year, CU was beating Oregon like 45-17 at half.
Yeah, I think it was 18-2 in the first 5 minutes or something.
Yeah, and like I think someone's going to get got that way this year. And I think it'll be USC just – I don't know how petty Tad is. I don't know if that rivalry is even still alive. But it would be fun if CU just punched them in the mouth and just kept punching.
Yeah, it's hard to see at the end of it. It's weird because this should be the most knowable CU team in the Tad Boyle era. We know all of these players. We've seen all these players for over 60 games. I think approaching 70 games now. You know, and yet I'm still like, I don't know. The team we have seen right now is still probably good enough to make it to the tournament, but there's obviously an extra gear that they all know is there. Can we see that? Can we see that for most games? Will we see that for most games? I don't know.
I think if we go 8-1 at home, we will make the tournament pretty easily.
Oh, yeah. That Dayton win really puts you in a really good position. Quadrant one, you know, that's going to be a top 50 win on a neutral court at the end of the year. That's good. That's good.
All right. Give me an away game that you're most excited about.
I'm excited about? Let's see. I'll do USC. I want to see Tad Boyle beat the crap out of Andy Enfield at USC again.
Yeah, I want to see that too. I'm going to pick both the Arizona games. I think the Arizona State game will be really fun because it's a rematch of the China game.
Yeah, and I will actually be at those games.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, I think CU is just the better team than Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
And that their fans are crazy. CU never wins there.
Arizona State?
Yeah. It's going to be really fun. And then the Arizona game, that's another, like, that's a top 50 win if you can win at the McHale against nationally ranked Arizona.
Oh, yeah, that is if you can do that on the road, yes, that punches their ticket.
So I think CU will have to show out for that game. So if like the freshmen in Arizona, they have stumbled just a little bit, that could be a really, really great win. That would be the rest win of the season, assuming they lose to Oregon at Oregon.
Yeah.
Which I think will happen. I think we'll lose to Oregon State too on the road.
Yeah. I don't know. They're an interesting team this year.
We might lose to Oregon State at home, too. If we start the Pac-12 Conference 0-2, that would suck ass. All the goodwill is gone.
I don't know why you think that I am not at all a fan of this Oregon State. It's the Trace Tinkle show, and the Thompson twins can't hurt us anymore. Just Ethan is left. I am not worried about this team.
Yeah, I'm worried. Last year, Trace Tinkle gave CU the work. And Kyler Kelly was just a monster inside. He's their big-ass center who averages, like, 5 blocks a game.
Mm-hmm.
And
he is third in the country in block percentage right now.
Yeah, they just took out Kelly for some reason at the end of the game. And CU won that way. But I feel like if CU fucked up at home against anyone that they shouldn't lose to, it would be Oregon State.
Well, that's who it was. What was it, 2 years ago? Last year, maybe? I don't know. I'm not worried at all about that one.
It just feels like a game CU won't make any shots.
But as we talked about, this team should be built for that.
Well, right? Not if Kelly is swatting everything at the rim.
Yeah. Has Kelly ever faced off against Evan Batty for a consistent time?
I don't think so.
Because that's going to make him tired. You can be as long as you want. Good luck getting across his body to block that shot.
I still think that's a win. I'm just sketched out by that game.
Yeah. I don't know. The Pac-12 is a lot of good teams this year and one great team, which means a lot of games are sketchy but not scary.
It also means that any away win CU gets will be pretty good.
Yep. They all buoy the resume, almost all of them.
Mm-hmm. Like Oregon State on the road is considered an A loss right – or an A win right now, and it's 50-50. Stanford, 50-50 away A win category.
Mm-hmm.
Even USC, A win category. This is lots of tournament potential in the schedule.
And USC right now is projected to be a 1-point game by advanced stats on the road, I should say.
Yeah. That's what these are all 1-point games I'm looking at.
Yeah. It's a fun season. It's going to be a fun season. CU has really, really set themselves up well for the conference schedule. If they can turn it on, which McKinley Wright always does during conference play, if the rest of the team can match that, which it looks like if Schwartz can get there too, that's 1-4. Find me a better starting lineup outside of Oregon because we can start running.
All right, I'm going to pick 12-6 conference play.
Whoa, okay. I was going to go the other way. I'm going to go 10-8.
Okay.
And if CU ends the season 21-10 with a winning conference record in the Pac-12, they are good as gold. That is just fine. It's going to be a 6 seed probably, maybe a 7 seed in the tournament.
Yeah, I think 12-6, that would make them 23-8 without the Pac-12 win. That puts them second, third in the conference.
You get that elusive first round bye.
Yeah, and then it would be roughly a 5 seed. Maybe I'll go 11-7.
Yeah, there's always something you don't see coming.
Yeah.
On both sides. I don't know. Oh, how exciting. All right, give me your conference season MVP on this team.
Oh, I was going to ask you the same. objectively it's Tyler Bay, but I want to pick Evan Batty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's like his attitude is part of why this team has been able to stay at 10 wins, soon to hopefully 11 wins going into the conference game.
Okay, who do you think steps up? Besides the top four, who's going to step up in conference?
Well, I think the overall MVP will be McKinley Wright again. I think that Dayton game made it click, and I think we're going to get back to the attack the basket, McKinley, the go for steals, run everyone off the court, McKinley. And he's gonna make a really good push, I think, for Pac-12 Player of the Year.
I picked him preseason.
Tyler Bay might be better overall, but unfortunately, it's just that's how the game works. Defense isn't as easy to sell as offense. So
that's why Matisse Thybulle didn't win Pac-12 Player of the Year last year.
As he should have. But as someone who's gonna step up that maybe isn't part of that big four that we've been talking about. And you know who it is. It's going to be my boy again. I love Lucas Seward this year. Even during the Dayton game, two huge threes during the stretch of the second half where McKinley was on the bench and we needed someone to score points. He's going to be a guy who's going to come in for 20 minutes. He's going to give you the rebounds. He's going to work hard on defense. He's going to hit shots that someone needs to hit. God, he's a luxury. He's a complete luxury.
I think that I agree with you. He's been really good. And I think he'll continue to be really good in that role. I really like that role for him. Especially also his scoring output against, who was it? He scored
Northern Iowa. He was the reason that CU was even close to that Northern Iowa game.
He scored like 17 points in the first half.
Because they kept leaving him open, and he kept hitting the shots because he knows he can hit the shots.
He even made post-ups too, like post-up fadeaways. I want to say Shane Gatling is going to pop off for a few games.
Well, he did. Again, he saved the team against CSU. Another luxury to have a senior that can just decide to hit shots.
He's the best 30% shooter I've ever seen. Also, Maddox Daniels is below 30% three-point shooting and turning the ball over half the time.
Yeah, I don't know what's happened with these JUCO sharpshooters that Tacky's bringing in, and then they don't shoot. I don't know what that is. If either of them can pump those numbers up from long range, this team becomes disgusting.
Also, before the season, there was talk that one of Kuntz, Parquet, Gatling, or Daniels would fall out of the rotation. And the way they've all played, they should all fall out of the rotation. But you have to play three of them.
Yeah, I think Gatling has worked on defense to get himself those minutes. I definitely think Daniels and Kuntz are the losses there, especially Daniels.
Yeah, Parquet has been doing what he's expected to do, which that's fine.
I think he only played 5 minutes against Dayton.
And he's a star.
But he started, and, you know, it made sense to shorten the bench against Dayton like that too, where you're riding your stars in that game, and that's what we saw. So I don't know. I would bet on a Batty being my MVP just because we love it. We both love him so much. And then – or sorry, not Batty. McKinley Wright being my MVP. And I'm going to say that Seward's the guy that steps up.
I think Seward also steps up. I hope it's Gatling as well.
That'd be nice. That would be nice if we can get something out of him rather than just, you know, 6 points a game, whatever. If we can get him up to maybe nine, 1.5 threes a game, 2 threes a game, that's huge.
Yeah, just give me him shooting 35% from three.
And Deshaun Schwartz, never stop shooting the ball.
He was really bad out against Kansas, but that's perfectly fine. Shooter got to shoot, even when you're off, shoot.
What is he at this year? I think, isn't he around like 50% from three?
I think so, actually. I think he's like 47. I'm pulling it. Don't go.
Mark Titus actually has he's at 46. He's at 46%. Yeah. Mark Titus has a really interesting point, thing he says about that, where he says if you're around 50% shooting from three, you're not shooting enough because you should never be around 50%. That just shows that you're a really good shooter, but you're not taking enough shots to like really help your team.
Well, he's shooting 4.5 a game.
I'm fine with him. Hey, man, if he's hitting that 46%, shoot more than that.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Give me I want to hear your Pac-12 first team. Who do you think is going to be your top five Pac-12 players?
Okay, Peyton Pritchard. He's going to be a first-team All-American probably, or up there.
True.
Peyton Pritchard, McKinley Wright, what'd that be? I guess we're looking at a wing or a big guard. Maybe Timmy Allen from Utah. He's been looking really good this year. Maybe Nico Mannion, if we count that. I don't know if we do. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Josh Green, so I can't really put him in there. Maybe it's Oscar De Silva from Stanford, if they keep playing as they have. Maybe it's Jordan Matthews from USC.
What about Onyeka Ongonkwo?
I don't even know. Oh, is that from USC? No, we're not even – I'm not to the forwards yet.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I think for that small forward spot, I'm probably going to go with Timmy Allen. He's going to put up a lot of numbers for a not great Utah team. And then as we get bigger, I'm going to put Tyler Bay at power forward, I think. I think CU keeps – there are two first-team Pac-12 players. I think I have to go with Isaiah Stewart.
Okay. I'm going to go five deep because that's how first team should be. The Pac-12 recognizes 10, but it should be five. I'm going to go Pritchard, McKinley Wright, then Tress Tinkle and Tyler Bay at forwards, and then Zeke Nagy at the other forward.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I actually think he's going to take a nosedive as people figure him out.
Okay, then I'll pick Isaiah Stewart in that case.
I mean, he's a cleanup man. He really should not be leading Arizona in scoring. That just means Arizona's missing a lot of shots.
Well, he's just so fast.
Zeke Nagy?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's also, like, I mean, never. You should never run your offense through him, you know?
Okay.
And I think as teams figure that out, especially as they face better rebounding teams.
Yeah, okay. So give me one game we shouldn't lose, one game we shouldn't win, but we will.
One game we shouldn't lose. I guess depending on your definition of shouldn't. I'm going to say I'm going based off of just the KenPom projections of losses and wins. I'm going to say that we lose to UCLA on the road. One game we should win that we are currently projected to lose, I'm actually going to say Oregon State on the road. I am not scared of them at all.
Okay, I'm going to be a little bit more risky than you, I guess.
Have fun.
I think we could lose to Oregon State at home. But I think Arizona State on the road is probably more likely. And then I also somehow think, I think on the road against Arizona is something we can win. If that's the game, CU just bullshits and gets this road win that we shouldn't get, that's the one.
That is bold. Absolutely bold.
That's fine.
I don't know. It's just nice. It's nice to talk about a team where we're pretty confident that most of the games are wins. So we're looking for some real, what would you call it, upsets.
Mm-hmm.
Either way. All right. Well, going into conference play, Steve still has Iona left. I think we're both expecting a pretty easy win there. Iona has taken a step back after the tournament team last year.
They played six games this year.
Iona has?
That's wacky.
I know. That's not that much. The two wins are against Stetson and Kennesaw State. And I think they're only projected to play 27. They're just going to play less games than CU is.
I feel like the program might be broke and they just can't really afford to going to games.
For a quick scheduling thing for CU, what CU's looking at, number one, Iona is very, very bad at assists per field goals made, as in they're giving up assists per field goals made. So CU should be able to work out some of those turnover and passing kinks. They only had 10 against Dayton, so it's not too bad. Iona is also very bad at shooting the three and defending the three. So look for Lucas Seward and Deshaun Schwartz to hopefully blow this game up.
And I'll be at that game. It'll be my first game going to this year.
Whoa. Nice. Okay. I don't think I will be. So you take that one. I'll take the road games.
Okay, yeah.
So hopefully CU goes to 11-2 heading the conference schedule. What a fun team. What a fun game.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right. I'm Jack Barsh. That's Sam Metivier back again. Here we go. It's at the buzzer.